Namaste, Saraswati Devi, Guru Ramana Prasadhe, Nivasesa Sanyadhi, Skati Om Bhagavati Vyas Tamehum Vasya, Jana Jana Salapaya, Chakshan Samanatam Zena, Tasmai Sri Gurave Namo Sri Chaitanya Manavistam Stapitam Vena Vitale Sayam Upakaramayam Vadati Sattam Vantika. Vansa Gopajavyas Cha Kripasin Vaya Vitsa Kripitanam Papadevyo Paisavyo Namo Namo. After Vasudev had returned from Gokul Mahavan on the other side of the Yamuna, carrying Krishna across the Yamuna and placing Krishna in the lap of Madhya Soda and taking the girl child back, who was actually Yogamaya. Then the doors inside and outside the house closed. The inhabitants of the house, especially the watchmen, heard the crying of the newborn child, and thus they awakened from their beds. Thereafter, all the watchmen very quickly approached King Kamsa, the ruler of the Bhoja dynasty, and submitted the news of the birth of Devaki's child. Kamsa, who had awaited this news very anxiously, immediately took action. So why did he await very anxiously?
Because of
the prophecy. The child of Devaki would kill him. And this was the eighth child, and he had attempted to kill. He had killed, actually killed six previous children, and one appeared to be a miscarriage, but actually that seventh child was Baladev, who was transferred by Yogamaya to the womb of Rohini. So the watchman, so Kamsa was just waiting for the child to be born, and then the watchman approached Kamsa, although it was very late at night, and told him, "We have heard the crying of the child. The eighth child has taken his birth." Kamsa immediately got up from bed, thinking, "Here is Kala, the supreme time factor, which has taken birth to kill me." Thus overwhelmed, Kamsa, his hair scattered on his head, and once approached the place where the child had been born. Devaki helplessly, piteously appealed to Kamsa, "My dear brother, all good fortune unto you, Kripana Kuro Nam Sati, don't kill this girl." Snusayam Tavakalyana Diyama Hantumarhasi. Don't kill this girl. She will be your daughter-in-law. Indeed, it is unworthy of you to kill a woman. My dear brother, by the influence of destiny, you have already killed many babies. Each of them is bright and beautiful as fire. But kindly spare this daughter. Give her to me as your gift. Influence of destiny, you have already killed my babies. Srila Chakravartiti Kaur said, fearing that Kamsa would become angry after she criticized him for his cruelty in killing her previous sons, Devaki said, it is my fate. What fault is there in you? So then expressed her pitiful condition, praying that Kamsa should not make her arms devoid of this child. My Lord, brother, I am very poor, being bereft of all my children. I have nothing. But still I'm your youngest sister, and therefore it would be worthy of you to give me this last child as a gift. Sukadeva Goswami said, piteously embracing her daughter and crying, Kamsa begged Kamsa for the child. So, what a situation. You can just imagine what kind of a person this Kamsa is. Because who could stand up to this type of a, you could say, pressure, just looking at it from an external point of view of is crying bitterly with a newborn baby, and the other babies had already been killed by him. She's begging him, and there's practically nothing to fear. She's begging him, let me have this child. And Kamsa was so cruel that he chastised her to forcibly snatch the child from her hands. Purport, although Devaki was crying like a poor woman, she was not poor, and therefore the word used here is dinavat. That's like a poor woman, not poor. She had already given birth to Krishna, therefore who could have been richer than she? Even the demigods had come to offer prayers to Devaki, but she played the part of a poor, piteously afflicted woman because she wanted to save the daughter of Yashoda. Having uprooted all relationships with his sister because of intense, what? What's the next word? Okay, that's one guess. Having uprooted all relationships with his sister because of intense Swartha Unmilita. Swartha, what does Swartha mean? Swartha. Anglaise? Selfishness. Uprooted Unmilita. Mulita. Mul root. Uprooted. All relationship with his sister because of his intense selfishness. Kamsa, who was sitting on his knees, grasped the newborn child by the legs and tried to, you don't even want to think about it. I mean, think about a little baby or something, and this is this disheveled, selfish asura, Kamsa. He grasped the newborn child by the legs and tried to dash her against the surface of a stone. The child, who was Yogamaya Devi, the youngest sister of Lord Vishnu. So, Satadashtasamutya Sadyo Devyam Varamgita Adrishyata Anuja Vishnu. So, Anuja Vishnu means what? Anuja means the younger sister of Vishnu. So, if Krishna is born in Mathura, and this is just simply Devaki's daughter in Gokul, how is she the younger sister of Vishnu? So this point is raised by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, who explains, already explained, and will explain it, comes up a few times perhaps, that Krishna is also born of Yasoda. He's actually the son of Yasoda. And also this, and also this is the younger sister. So Yasoda gave birth to twins, actually. And the younger sister, the younger one, was this Yogamaya. And then Vasudeva Devaki gave birth to Krishna, but not Vrindavan Krishna, but Vasudeva Krishna. And he appeared first in his actual form with Chaturbhuja in forearms. And then that forearm form, they requested him to hide that forearm form, and he returned to having a two-arm form, and then Vasudeva carried back Vasudeva Krishna to across the Yamuna and to the lap of Yasoda, who had just given birth, and Vasudeva Krishna merged into the original Krishna, the Swayam Rupa Krishna. And at that time, Vasudeva took the girl child back, and this is the girl child who is the younger sister of Vishnu, Anuja. Yata Anuja, Vishnu. Adrishyata, seen. Anuja Vishnu, Saayudha, Ashta Mahabhuja. Asta Mahabhuja, she had eight mighty arms, Sahajudya, with weapons. So she went up into the sky. She appeared, she slipped upward from Kamsa's hands and appeared in the sky as Devi. As Durga, with eight arms, completely equipped with weapons. Kamsa tried to dash the child downward against a piece of stone. But since she was Yogamaya, the younger sister of Lord Vishnu, she slipped upward and assumed the form of the goddess Durga. The word Anuja, meaning the youngest sister, is significant. When Vishnu or Krishna took birth from Devaki, he must have simultaneously taken birth from Yasoda also. Otherwise, how could Yogamaya have been Anuja, the Lord's youngest sister? So the goddess Durga was decorated with flower garlands, smeared with sandalwood pulp, and dressed with excellent garments and ornaments made of valuable jewels. Holding in her hands a bow, a trident, arrow, shield, sword, kanchala, disc, and club, and being praised by celestial beings like Apsaras, Kinaras, Urugas, Sitas, Charanas, and Kandavas, who worshipped her with all kinds of presentations, she spoke as follows. So, this Durga Devi was actually Kamsa's worshipable deity. He was a worshipper of Durga and Lord Shiva. So he was so amazed that his worshipable deity was coming here and speaking to him. So she spoke as follows. O Kamsa, kim maya hataya manda. What is the use of trying to kill me? O manda. Manda, you are less intelligent, you are a fool. Yatra kalu tavantakrit yatra kva va purva shatrur mahimsi vipana vritti. The Supreme Personality, what is the use of trying to kill me? The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is been your enemy from the very beginning, who, and who will certainly kill you, has already taken his birth somewhere else. Therefore, do not unnecessarily kill other children. Kripanam vritta unnecessarily, ma duna. Your former enemy has already taken his birth. Don't try to kill this person. What is the use? So after speaking to Kamsa in this way, Goddess Durga, Yogamaya, appeared in different places, such as Benares, and became celebrated by different names, such as Annapurna, Durga, Kali, and Bhadra. After hearing the words of the Goddess Durga, Kamsa was struck with wonder. Thus, because, after all, he was thinking that who was born of Devaki? Durga Devi, and this is his worshipable deity, so he was struck with wonder, because Durga, the goddess Durga, had become the daughter of Devaki. So Devaki was a human being, how could the goddess Durga become the daughter? This was one cause of the astonishment. Also, how is it that the chief child of Devaki was a female? This also astonished him. Asuras are generally devotees of Mother Durga, Shakti, or the demigod, especially Lord Shiva. The appearance of Durga and her original eight-armed feature holding various weapons immediately changed Kamsa's mind about Devaki being an ordinary human. Devaki must have some transcendental qualities, otherwise, why would the goddess have taken birth from her womb? Under the circumstances, Kamsa was struck with wonder and wanted to compensate for his atrocities against his sister Devaki. After all, he had killed six of her children, and how is he going? And there, but he was afraid. Now he was terrified, and he was very, very humble. But Devaki was obviously not ordinary. She was because his worshipable deity Durga Devi had taken birth from her. So the verse was: once he approached his sister Devaki and brother Vasudeva, he released them immediately from their shackles and then very humbly spoke as follows: alas, my sister, alas, my brother-in-law, I am indeed so sinful, exactly like a Rakshas who eats his own children. I have killed so many sons that are born of you. Being merciless and cruel, I have forsaken all my relatives and friends. Therefore, like a person who has killed a Brahmana, I do not know to which planet I shall go, either after death or while breathing. If I'm alive or death, I don't know how am I going to suffer for what I've done. Alas, not only human beings, but sometimes even providence lies. And I'm so sinful. So what is the providence that had lied? Because the Akashvani, the voice in the sky, had said the eighth child will kill you. But the word was Garba. It didn't actually mention whether it was going to be a male or a female. But he assumed it was going to be a male. And he thought that, how is this girl going to kill me? So. And she's Durga Devi, and she's my worshipable deity. So, not even providence. I'm so sinful that I believed the omen of providence and killed so many of my sister's children. Even providence has lied. Oh, great souls, my children have suffered their own misfortune. Therefore, please do not lament for them. All living entities are under the control of the Supreme, and they cannot always live together. So, now the demon will speak philosophy. He says, what to do? Who can stop anything from happening? This is just the will of providence, of fate. In this world, we can see that pots, dolls, and other products of the earth appear, they break, they disappear, mixing again with the earth. Similarly, the bodies of all conditioned living beings are annihilated. But the living being, like the earth itself, they're unchanging. They're never annihilated. This is the Kamsa Vajita. One does not understand the constitutional position of the body and the soul becomes too attached to the bodily concept of life. Consequently, because of attachment to the body and its byproducts, he feels affected by union with and separation from his family, society, and nation. As long as this continues, one continues his material life. Otherwise, one will be liberated. There's one old story of how some man had died and his body was placed at the burning ghat, and it was late at night. It was very close to the end of night, and it would have been so they were trying to decide whether it was auspicious to burn him now or not, or should they wait for the morning. So you see this also in Vrindavan, when there's a burning, all kinds of creatures arrive. Turtles, when they see the fire reflected in the water, the turtles, you can see them with their heads up this morning, so they're caught to be thrown in. And dogs sit nearby, patiently going, just waiting for their, if they can get something out of it. So at this particular time, a vulture came by, and also a jackal came by. And the vulture eats in the daytime. So the vulture started preaching very strongly, no, you should wait till the night, till the next morning. Because it's not proper to burn so close to the end of the day. You should wait till the next morning. And the vulture was thinking that way, I'll have some time to get to the body. And the jackal starts saying, no, don't listen to the vulture, because the jackal eats at night. So he said, he told the opposite. So he would have his time. You should burn it, at different times, like that, so he could be able to eat the body at night. So when the jackal and the vulture preach, they may speak philosophical words, they may quote sastra, but what is their purpose? It's just their own purpose. It has nothing to do with the purpose of sastra. So Kamsa spoke like this, and also in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam, there's the preaching of Haranyakashipu. So he continues. He says, my dear sister Devaki, all good fortune unto you. Everyone suffers and enjoys the results of his own work under the control of providence. Therefore, although your sons have unfortunately been killed by me, please do not lament for them. In bodily conception of life, one remains in darkness without self-realization. So why had Kamsa done all these things? Why did he kill them? Because he was simply afraid for his kingdom. And he was afraid of his own death. So where was the philosophy, the wise philosophy then? So of course, this is something that perhaps we also note, that it is easier to preach to others. But aside from that, Kamsa wasn't going to be able, he didn't even try to practice what he preached. In the bodily conception of life, one remains in darkness without self-realization, thinking I've been killed or have killed my enemy. As long as a foolish person thus considers the self to be the killer or the killed, he continues to be responsible for material obligations, and consequently he suffers the reactions of happiness and distress. Kamsa, my dear sister, my dear brother-in-law, please be merciful to such a poor-hearted person as me. Since both of you are saintly persons, please excuse my atrocities. And said this, Kamsa fell at the feet of Vasudeva and Devaki, his eyes full of tears of regret. Full of meaning in the words of the goddess Durga, Kamsa exhibited his familial affection for Devaki and Vasudeva by immediately releasing them from their iron shackles. When Devaki saw her brother-in-law, mother, actually repent while explaining ordained events, she was also relieved of all anger. Similarly, Vasudeva was also free from anger. Smiling, he spoke to Kamsa as follows. Of course, Vasudeva, he had brought Krishna across the river, and he knew that Krishna was safe. Devaki and Vasudeva, both highly elevated personalities, accepted the truth presented by Kamsa, that everything is ordained by providence. According to the prophecy, Kamsa would be killed by the eighth child of Devaki. Therefore, Vasudeva and Devaki saw that behind all these incidents was a great plan devised by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because the Lord had already taken birth just like a human child and was in the safe custody of Yashoda, everything was happening according to plan. And in fact, Krishna's plan was that he grow up in Vrindavan. He wanted to grow up in Vrindavan and have his pastimes there, surrounded by the loving devotees of Braja. So, everything was happening according to plan, and there was no need to continue to hear ill feelings towards Kamsa, thus they accepted Kamsa's words. And Vasudeva spoke. O great personality, Kamsa, only by the influence of ignorance does one accept the material body and bodily ego. What you have said about this philosophy is correct. Persons in the bodily concept of life, lacking self-realization, differentiate in terms of this is mine, this belongs to another. Persons with a vision of differentiation are imbued with material qualities of limitation, deviation, fear, envy, greed, illusion, and madness. Soka harsha maya dvesha, lobha moha madan vitaha, Mito grantam napasyanti babar babam pitagdrisha. They are influenced by the immediate cause, which they are busily counteracting, because they have no knowledge of the remote supreme cause, the personality of Godhead. Sri Goswami continued, thus having been addressed in purity by Devaki and Vasudeva, who were very much appeased, Kamsa felt pleased, and with their permission, he entered his home. After that task, Kamsa summoned his ministers and informed them of all that had been spoken by Yogamaya, who revealed that he who was to slay Kamsa had already been born somewhere else. Vedic scripture Chandi describes Maya, the energy of the Supreme Lord, as Nidra. Nidra Devi Savabhuteshu Nidrupena Samastitaha. The energy of Yoga Maya and Mahamaya keep the living entities sleeping in this material world in the great darkness of ignorance. Yoga Maya, the goddess Durga, kept Kamsa in darkness about Krishna's birth and misled him to believe that his deity, Krishna, had been born elsewhere. Krishna was born the son of Devaki, but according to the Lord's original plan, as prophesied to Brahma, he went to Vrindavan to give pleasure to Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj and other intimate friends and devotees for 11 years. Then he would return to kill Kamsa. Because Kamsa did not know this, he believed Yogamaya's statement that Krishna was born elsewhere, not of Devaki. And after hearing the master's statement, explaining what had happened, the envious asuras, he had advisors who were asuras because he was an asura. The envious Asuras, who are enemies of the demigods, and who are not very expert in their killings, advise Kamsa as follows. If this is so, O king of the Bhojendra dynasty, Bhojendra, beginning today, you shall kill all the children born in all the villages, towns, and pasturing grounds within the past 10 days, or even slightly more. The demigods always fear the sound of your boasting. They are constantly in anxiety, afraid of fighting. Therefore, what can they do in their endeavors to harm you? While being pierced by your arrows, as you discharged on all sides, some of them, who were injured by the multitude of arrows but who desired to live, fled the battlefield, intent on escaping. Defeated, bereft of all weapons, some of the demigods gave up fighting and praised you with folded hands, and some said, appearing before you with loosened garments and hair, they said, O Lord, we are very much afraid of you. So what's happening to Kamsa's false ego while they're speaking like this? Yes, yes, you're reminding me of how powerful, how great I am. Even the demigods fear me. And when the demigods are bereft of their chariots, when they forget how to use weapons, when they are fearful or attached to something that they're fighting, when their bows are broken, and they have lost the ability to fight, your majesty does not kill them. You're so kind. Principles that govern even fighting. If an enemy has no chariot and is unmindful of the fighting art because of fear, is unmindful of the fighting art because of fear, or is unwilling to fight, he is not to be killed. Kamsa's ministers reminded Kamsa that despite his power, he was aware of the principles of fighting. Therefore, he had excused the demigods because of their incapability. The present emergency, the minister said, is not intended for such mercy or etiquette. Now you should prepare to fight under any circumstances. Thus, he advised Kamsa to give up the traditional etiquette in fighting and chastise his enemy at any cost. The demigods boast uselessly while away from the battlefield. Only when there is no fighting can they show their power. Therefore, from such demigods, you have nothing to fear. As far as Lord Vishnu is concerned, he is in seclusion in the core of the hearts of the yogis. As for Lord Shiva, he has gone to the forest. And as for Lord Brahma, he's always engaged in austerities and meditation. The other demigods, headed by Indra, are devoid of prowess. Therefore, you have nothing to fear. Just prepare to fight. Nonetheless, because of their enmity, our opinion is that the demigods should not be neglected. Therefore, to uproot them completely, engage us in fighting with them, for we are ready to follow you. As a disease, if initially neglected, becomes acute and impossible to cure, or as the senses, if not controlled at first, are impossible to control later, or an enemy is neglected in the beginning, later becomes insurmountable. The foundation of all the demigods is Lord Vishnu, who lives in his worship wherever there are religious principles, traditional culture, the Vedas, cows, Brahmanas, austerities, and sacrifices with proper remuneration. O King, we who are your followers in all respects shall therefore kill the Vedic Brahmanas, the persons engaged in offering sacrifices and austerities, and the cows that supply milk. So Kamsa was actually doing these things. He was killing Brahmins and cows. From which clarified butter is obtained for the ingredients of sacrifice. The Brahmins, the cows, they acknowledge austerity, truthfulness, control of the mind and senses, faith, mercy, tolerance, and sacrifice. Ah, that's interesting. Are the different parts of the body of Lord Vishnu, and they are paraphernalia for a godly civilization. So I'll read that list again and see how much those things are prevalent or absent in the contemporary world. The Brahmins, the cows. And now they only have light cows. They have light cows, but they're pumped up with hormones and antibiotics, and they're treated so terribly. Anyway, the Brahmins, the cows, Vedic knowledge, austerity, truthfulness, control of the mind, control of the senses, faith, mercy, tolerance, sacrifice. These are the different parts of the body of Lord Vishnu. They are the paraphernalia for a godly civilization. What does paraphernalia mean? It means here is Hari Tanu, the parts of the body of Lord Hari. What is paraphernalia? These things are necessary for a godly civilization. And out of these, what are they? There's no Brahmins. There are cows. Look how they're treated. Vedic knowledge. You know what in place of Vedic knowledge is? What? And what? Yeah.
You can just see.
Yeah, it's all science. That's what's accepted. People don't have faith in Vedas, but they have faith in. They have no faith in Shastra, but they have faith in science. It's not that. It's not that. That people don't have faith. It's not like. In the old days, people used to have faith and they would just use reason. No, it's just faith and faith. Just faith in different people. Austerity. Truthfulness. Where is it again?
People still have some sense of honesty to some degree.
Yeah.
The last link of religion.
What's your experience with it?
Yes, that if people are treated correctly or nicely, it can bring out the good side of them.
Yeah, the honest side. How about austerity? No matter how much they don't be austere, they don't want to be. I mean, that's the whole purpose of the way people live, is to avoid the causes of austerity, to control nature so there's no need for austerity anymore. Control of the mind. How do people control their minds? Not through breathing exercises and focus it, yeah, through television and internet, so they have the mind controlled for them. They don't have to even do it. And senses, how do you control the senses? By
intoxication.
Yeah.
They have a sense of control sometimes when they look at like sports stars and people like that who practice and practice and practice.
So they have admiration for it, from a distance. Yeah, but as far as themselves, maybe the common people are always like that. Virtual Olympics. You too can be an Olympic star.
As well as a rock star.
Yeah, with that guitar. You know what
they
came? Guitar Hero. Yeah, there's farm. There's virtual farms. You ever see that?
Virtual farms.
Yeah, they have virtual farms. Where you can, on your computer, in Facebook, yeah. Farmville, that's what it's called. How do you know? It was trying to take over your site. So they have a farm where you can make believe You can plant the seeds and you can plow an area on your farm and you can sell it and make a profit, and of course make a profit. You use real money for this to buy, you know, to grow imaginary crops.
Real money.
Real money to, yeah, I mean, they take you real money. And there's Guitar Hero, where you can just by going, you could be whistling away on your guitar. And there's another one too, there's Grand Auto Theft. Yeah, and you can steal cars all day long and not get caught by the police. Oh, you can get caught by the police too, but just get virtual jail. And you can do everything only an illusion within an illusion.
So, in an extremely sophisticated way.
Yeah.
It's baffled people's minds.
Huh?
Completely baffled people's minds.
But they have some virtual reality I heard about where you can have a virtual identity.
Yeah, yeah.
And then even in Australia, if you buy insurance with a particular company,
yeah,
then you get some virtual dollars,
yeah,
and then you can afford to buy that, you know, oceanfront property in,
yeah,
the virtual world,
yeah,
and then you can feel better about
it. You can have virtual stores, and other people who are members of that community can visit and buy things from their virtual store. Yeah, virtual marriages.
They work?
Virtual children?
Do they work?
Huh? Virtuously. But yeah, I mean, it's because, as we were saying, that's all the complete mode of passion, which goes to the ignorance, where everyone is satisfied with what they are, with what they have, so they have to make up a whole secondary universe existence.
The life is so dead in
it. Yeah. And the poor people who took birth before all these things were available, how did they survive?
They had to actually go and work in the fields and deal with the sun and the rain.
They were primitive.
Yeah. We just have to go to the shop.
You don't need money.
You need money.
You don't need money.
Yeah.
Your credit card.
That's right.
Plastic. Too, it's plastic. Tolerance, but sacrifice. These are the different parts. What does sacrifice mean? What does sacrifice mean?
It's like foregoing something to get something better.
Yeah. Well, they sacrifice. It's a world. Everything is opposite. You deal with I don't deal with the people of this world. You don't deal with the people of this world. You deal with them in a very limited way. Well, you deal with them. I don't know about you. Are they happy? What's your impression? I mean, actually, like, what?
No.
And then I'll ask you.
Definitely not. Sometimes there's a sense of, I feel they are.
You feel they are happy?
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah.
And what kind of people feel themselves happy?
People who have stable situations with their family or nice in their house. And, they're young and things are looking good.
So stability. Happy. Yeah. What's your impression?
How much the people I see are struggling to survive. Because working in the post office there, they come and pay the bills, and they're all complaining about the bills and the prices. They look like they've been in a storm for a long time, and they come in. They look tired. People look tired to me. But I live in New Zealand, of course.
And Australia, everyone's there. Should be right. No one pays bills here.
I don't know. New Zealanders, they all want to move to Australia.
Some people there aren't happy. And what is the university? Are people happy? What's your question?
I noticed that even the ones who are quite well off and have a stable life, they're so dissatisfied. Just constantly wanting something more to enrich their existence. New clothes, new hairstyles, new friends, new farms.
I saw somehow or another, I saw this show that Apple put on. I saw the first beginning of it, and when the head of Apple came out, they were treating him like he was an incarnation or something. It was amazing. And then they brought out the guy who put together this Farmville thing, and he was such a jerk. It was incredible. And he was just such a money man. And even though they were showing how they through these applications they were making so much money for the developers, because it was a developers conference, the program developers. And they brought out three of the program developers. They had 5 minutes each or something like that. And one of them was the Farmville fellow. I wouldn't buy a used car from him. I'd just think of a farm from him. I know this kind of people. He was a real New Yorker. He came out with a Farmville T-shirt on, sort of an old man. And then he at the end, you know, hints that everyone's in Farmville. You know, just as if, you know, it was so gross. It was gross. It was gross.
To make money on the fact that
people dissatisfied. Well, they, yeah, just, yeah. They wanted everyone to start the same life in the office, and going to the office, and etc. etc. And want to live in the country and breathe good air and. So you can go over your computer instead of doing it. So you can think, you can believe you're doing it. It's just imaginary.
The point of happiness. Some people live in constant anticipation of happiness.
Yeah.
And some people live in stubborn happiness.
Yeah.
Usually it's centered around something like a family.
Yeah.
Then there's all the terrible things going on, you have a sense that the family is bringing them all this joy. If you go down to the nuts and bolts, you know, some of those difficult people, even within that family environment. And then there are those who just basically live in happiness of ignorance.
When you were dealing with the young people, because I can't remember that far back, but with the young people that you were dealing with, were they happy? No. Yeah, did it appear they were happy or they were? So if the young people are miserable and running away from home and doing all kinds of things with their parents' knowledge and things like that, how's the family going to be peaceful and happy? So if the young people are miserable, and of course they're going to be miserable because everything is so cranked up for desiring, for enjoying, and the young people are so vulnerable. So how are they going to be happy? You know, and if they're not happy, how is it going to be if they're not obedient and they just keep their family members' health? And then
Yeah.
I must stop the young people take intoxication.
Huh?
I must stop the young people take intoxication. So they must be unhappy. They're all, especially in New Zealand, a huge percentage.
Australia, no one takes intoxication. If you're all happy, you're not involved. What's the use?
A lot of young people in New Zealand smoke marijuana.
In Christchurch even, there's so much suicide, is it, or whatever, or something like that. There's really terrible things going on in this little city. Uh-huh.
The highest rate in the world.
In New Zealand. Too mental.
Too much happiness, they don't know what to do with it. So anyway, here's the reason. Because this is the demons speaking. What they're saying is distinct what they're saying. We who your adherents in all respects should kill the Vedic Brahmanas, the persons engaged in offering sacrifices and austerities, and the cows that supply milk from which clarified butter, ghee is obtained from the ingredients of the sacrifice. Because the Brahmins, the cows, Vedic knowledge, austerity, truthfulness, control of the mind and senses, faith, mercy, tolerance, and sacrifice are the different parts of the body of Lord Vishnu, and they are the paraphernalia for godly civilization. So the frame of reference that this is being spoken is these, the advisors of Kamsa are saying that we're going to destroy all these pillars of godly civilization consciously, willingly. Lord Vishnu, the super soul within the core of everyone's heart, is the ultimate enemy of the Asuras, and therefore he is known as Asura Mate. He is the leader of all the demigods, because all the demigods, including the Shiva and Brahma, exist under his protection. The saintly persons, sages, and Vaishnavas also depend on him. To persecute the Vaishnavas, therefore, is the only way to kill Vishnu. This is having conditional pain. So this is a Asura Bhav. This is the mood, grossly, of the Asuras, of someone with a demonic mentality. Everything that is good, we destroy. This is Kali. Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus having considered the instructions of his bad minister Kamsa, who is bound by the laws of Yamaraj and devoid of good intelligence because he was a demon, decided to persecute the saintly persons, the Brahmins, as the only way to achieve his own good fortune. These demons, the followers of Kamsa, were expert at persecuting others, especially the Vaishnavas, and they could assume any form they desired. After giving the demons permission to go everywhere and persecute the saintly persons, Kamsa entered his palace. Surcharged with ignorance, and not knowing what was good or bad for him, the Asuras, for whom impending death was waiting, began the persecution of the saintly persons. How bizarre that it is such a description of Kali Yuga and what goes on. Benediction. When a man persecutes great souls, all his benedictions of longevity, beauty, fame, religion, blessings, and promotion to higher planets will be destroyed. Shall move to Buddha, where the Sri Nanda Maharaj has just taken his birth. Okay, any questions or comments?
Who were the other children that were killed before Yagamon? The other six?
Oh, there's six. Maybe we can get some back later on for a short time. And they drink, even though they're already older, they're six, I can't remember exactly.
Vasus?
Huh?
They were cursed.
In the 11th canto, this is described. and then they drink the breast milk of Devaki, and because that has been drunk by Krishna, that prasadam purifies them, and then they get back by Krishna's mercy, because Devaki had heard that Krishna brought back the dead son of Sandipani Muni. So she asked Krishna to return her own children. So the 84th chapter or 85th chapter of the chapter. Any other questions? Come.
This struck me that I never thought of it quite this way before, but hearing it then, that what an experience that would have been to come to. He goes to kill a baby girl in a violent way, and then his wish is deeply malicious. And yet, after an experience like that, he didn't transform very much as a person.
They're the sons of Marichi, which is in the 85th chapter. During the age of the first Manu, the sage Marichi had six sons by his wife Urna. They were all exalted demigods, but once they left the Lord Brahma. Because of this improper act, they immediately entered the demonic form of life, and thus they took birth as the sons of Hiranyakashipu. The goddess Yogamaya then took them away from Hiranyakashipu, and they were born again from Devaki's womb. After this, O king, Kamsa murdered them. Devaki still laments for them, thinking of them as her sons. These same sons of Mrityu are now living here with you. We wish to take them from this place to dispel their mother's sorrow. Then, released from their curse and freed from all sufferings, they will return to their home in heaven. In my grace, these six Smara, Udgita, Parishvanga, Patanga, Chudrabhat, and Pini will return to the abode of pure saints. After saying this, Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram, having been duly worshipped as Balaraj, took the six sons and returned to Dwarka, where they presented them to their mother. When she saw her lost children, goddess Devaki felt such affection for them that milk flowed from her breast. She embraced them and took them on her lips, smelling their heads again and again. Lovingly, she let her sons drink milk from her breast, which became wet with milk just by their touch. She was entranced by that same illusory energy of Lord Vishnu that initiates the creation of the universe. By drinking her nectarian milk, the remnants of what Krishna himself had previously drunk, the six sons touched the transcendental body of the Lord Narayan, and this contact awakened them to their original identities. They had them to Govinda, Devaki, their father, and Balaram, and then, as everyone looked on, they left for the abode of the demigods. Seeing her sons return from death and then depart again, Saint Devaki was struck with wonder. She concluded that this was all simply an illusion created by Krishna. More to the story, too. Let's describe. They had worshipped. They were the sons of Hiranyakashipu. And that's connected with Kamsa, too, with Kalanini. So Hiranyakashipu, and they were worshipping, they wanted to gain something. They worshipped someone other than Hiranyakashipu, and Hiranyakashipu was furious with them. They were the sons of Kamsa. and Hiranyakashipu was furious with them for worshiping someone other than him. So he killed them or something, or he cursed them that they would be killed by their own father, who was Kavamuni, who was later killed by Vishnu. Some history is there. There's always history behind everything that happens. In these cases, we can read about the history in other shastra. In our own cases, we just have to accept that what happens, there's history behind it, even though it's hard for us to know what the history is, but there's history. What do you think of that?
Somewhat yes, but to accept that. It's difficult for those of us who are
atheists.
Yeah.
But it's also difficult for those of us who are atheists, who want to be real atheists, but like conscious friends here. That's pretty extreme, isn't it? So we're probably more theistical than atheistical. But what if we don't accept that there's some history behind the present, but we do accept that the present causes the future? You know, everyone accepts that, right? That what we do now, like if you go to school and get an education, that affects your future. So why don't we accept that the present is influenced by the past?
Maybe it's because we can't understand exactly where it came from. So.
Well, okay, we might not understand exactly where it came from, but still we'd have to accept the intelligence, accept the principle, it seems.
That's the principle of evolution. It's evolving.
Huh?
Things are evolving. Evolution.
It's only evolution.
The past has evolved to the point where it, yeah.
One reason is that people aren't very thoughtful.
That's not a good reason. That's another reason. It's not atheistical. It's thoughtlessness. Oh, okay. Now we're calling it a spade a spade.
A lot of people don't take the time to think about those things, and if you were to ask them to think about it, they would have a step backwards to them, they'd get the backup about the fact that you're asking them to think about it.
Because they're too busy. You know, and there's so much pressure from the rest of their life. And it seems to be a consequential question. Someone who's atheistical, why does he think he's in the situation he's in now?
Chance.
Yeah, luck.
You did it to me. That's what they usually think. Well, I think they did it to me. Is it point to something, you know, that has made them into the victim of terrible things? Even in contemporary thought, New Agey type of thought, everyone is really against this victimology stuff. You know, everyone talks about responsibility for yourself and who you are, so it's really contemporary. So no one likes this victimology stuff.
But what do you do if you've seen somebody do something to you, and you can't get past the fact that this person did do this to you?
Well, yeah. So, you know, that the best answer to that is that different individuals respond. What happens to you may not be in your control. Not that people don't do things to you, But how you respond is what your responsibility is. That famous little story about, you know, the father who was an alcoholic had the two sons. One was a brain surgeon, one was a Bowery Darrow. And they asked the Bowery Darrow, why did you become the way you are? And he said, well, with a father like that, what else could have happened to me? And then they asked the brain surgeon, why did you become the way you are? And he said, with a father like that, what else could have happened to me? Just a good story.
They were twins.
They were twins in the story. I wonder if
it was actually true. But me told me about it one time, and I'm from the newspaper. It's true.
It's a true story. Mm-hmm. But there's so many people who, some people become strong by that, like by fate, and some people get crushed by it. Mm-hmm. You know, some people, yeah, so there is freedom how we deal with our fate. And that's the point. And if you look at anyone who succeeded in life, you rarely find someone who's they just floated into success. You know, you talk to anyone and they everyone has their trials. Well, they had to do work and they had to deal with adversity and they had to deal with adverse situations. And it makes it strong. By the grace of God, you get stronger by them if you if you deal with them in a courageous way, and with support. Some people don't have support even in the So what's the best I can do with the difficulties that I deal with? Let me do it. Let me go forward with it. Even Prabhupada said that man is the architect of his fate. Did I say that? That's a famous saying. Yeah, Prabhupada also said that. Man is the architect of his destiny. So what of the people who don't think, who think that their life is fully out of control, what do they say about that?
The thing is, when you have a specific emotional response to a circumstance, it doesn't feel like you had a choice. It feels like you were forced to respond that way.
Then.
Because the emotion is so strong.
Then.
Yeah.
But how about now? Then is then. But how about now?
You mean in retrospect?
No. How about in the present? Because you can't undo the past.
Yeah, what I'm saying is, according to a particular circumstance, it'll invoke an emotional response that you don't feel like you had a choice to respond that way.
Right, but how about now? Knowing what you know, does that give you more choice? So the past is already done.
Mm.
And you can't undo the past. Our freedom is more now. So then if you say, well, I have such a strong emotional reaction to it, is it possible for me to act anything other than by my strong emotional response? And, right? If that was the question is?
Well, my point would be that you probably find the answer to no. I don't think I can do anything else.
Well, then what would you say to such a person? Say, do you want to do anything else?
Mm.
And how would they respond?
Yes, obviously.
But I can't. Well, do you want to? Well, that's the first step. Change the desire, because everything is based on desire. That is at the heart of the 15th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. And it's also, so many people talk about this, the whole law of attraction thing is all based on that. You attract according to your desire. So if you don't want to change,
yeah. The core of it is that you don't want to change. The core of it.
Well, what you got to change is the core and the core. Do you want to change or not? Well, then stop complaining if you want to change. And just
generally, it seems like people have both. They have a certain degree of desire to change and a certain degree of desire not to change, and they're in conflict within themselves.
Okay, so if one side increases, the other side will go down. So which side do you want to increase? So how do you increase the desire to be different than you are, and to change, and to improve? How do you do that? A lot of it has to do with association, too.
I just want to feel the end that description tonight of comfort.
Yeah.
He has an experience where he's acting according to his nature.
Yeah.
And his worshipful deity appears.
Yeah.
And yet, that should be a transformational point.
It was. But why did he go back to being just old, dirty old comfort again?
Yeah, so the association.
Back to the same
friend. Yeah. And he said, I got this great idea, it should be nice to everyone from now on. He was like, Kamsa, give me a break. You know, they're all afraid of you. You know, now's your chance.
Yeah, so then we can say, within us all, it's that part that no matter how strong and influential transformational experiences are, we'll still within our heart revert to our lower tendencies.
But that's not what it says. That's not this particular incident. If we ask the same people who have been advising us all along, we'll get the same answers.
If the mind is the one that's been advising us all along, if the mind is our bad association, how do we cut out the mind?
Well, we need some other advisors. I mean, if we...
Yeah, on a subtle level, we're reverting back to the same source.
I mean, if all we have, if our mind, if we have a good mind, and there are people who do have good minds, then it's not a problem. But if you have a bad mind, and you don't know it, that's one thing. But if you have a bad mind, and suddenly you realize that these are my advisors are giving me so much trouble, then what do we do?
Suffer a lot.
Yeah.
Because you're like waking up, but you still like have this torture and tortuous. Now you're in contradiction with this mind that's within you.
But at some point you have to. Seems like we have to accept it. That if we keep on the same way of thinking, we're going to get the same results.
Mm.
So, therefore, this is another very contemporary, this is what New Age people say all the time. So, how do you change your way of thinking? You have to put in new input. You have to get, so what is the way of new input? That we recommend Hare Krishna Mantra, we recommend Shastra, we recommend association with devotees, we recommend
the good grains going in after the bad grains in the silo that the old yogi was talking about. There's bad grains in there already, and so there's something, you're reaping bad and then tasting bad fruits, but good grains are actually sitting there. Well, Prabhupada said the pennies in the bank, and every time you say Krishna's name, you stick a penny in the bank. Putting pennies in the bank.
talk on the theoretical level. It's very easy. But practically, it's not so easy. And a lot of the not easy part of it is that we want to keep everything the same but change. So that contradiction leaps within. So how to deal with that? You can't keep everything the same. Everything will be the same. And then if you want everything to change completely, then you have to change on the deepest level. So much has to do with association.
When Prabhupada in 1932 in Sydney, I got a double decker bus.
Yeah.
And I used to travel around in this bus. And Prabhupada had a paint on the side of the bus, Krishna consciousness, the positive alternative.
That was Prabhupada's idea, or was that Mohananda's idea? You have one of those in New Zealand, right? Pulled by a rabbit as bull. After you cut his horns. That would be such an attraction.
You should just get
young ones and try them. Hooked up and they pulled by rabbits as well. Okay, good night. Something to think about. So tomorrow is up here. What Krishna does, well, from then on, from this time on, Krishna is in complete anxiety. And Krishna is not in any anxiety. One can't help but thinking, if Kamsa would just act like a nice fellow, he wouldn't have to be killed. He caused his own death, it's so clear. And if he didn't put Vasudeva and Devaki in prison, if he didn't try to kill Devaki, there would be no need. So was it the prophecy that caused it? Because he would have said, anyway, I'll be killed anyway, everyone has to die, anyway.
He did say that.
Huh? Yeah. Anyway, he did say it, right? There's so many ironies in the whole thing, isn't there?
The
comfort within
us is that as well.
Sure. The comfort within, killed by the Krishna within. The atheist again. This fellow wrote a book, Awakening the Giant. But how giant the real giant is, he doesn't know. Hare Krishna.